Hey, White Sox fans, guess what? You know it's playoff time. You know something good's happening with the White Sox when the Dugout Metrics guys show up to do a podcast. This is sweet. It's number 7, and we're playing off of today. We're going to talk about a number of things, but one thing we're going to do, sort of anchoring this podcast at the very end, is we're going to discuss an article that Luke's put out today that talks about optimizing the optimal White Sox lineup, what Tony La Russa should do for the best offensive lineup. He's got some interesting ideas based on the book, which is the book, let's face it. But we'll get to that at the end. Teaser, stick around, people. But first of all, welcome, guys. It's good to see you. I did recognize both of you right off, believe it or not. I didn't misname you.
It's good to be back.
Thanks, Brett.
It's good to be in October.
Sure.
you like that. Every time we do these, I get to hassle you. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, each one of the podcasts we've been doing the last week or so, probably second half of the season, let's face it, but certainly since playoffs clinched, locked in with Houston, and certainly in just yesterday's podcast, the big discussion was, hey, just how you feeling? 93 wins, season's over. Obviously, we're all looking ahead, but just looking back on the season, defining your expectations, meeting them, just how you feeling right now with just a couple days before the Sox start their second postseason in a row?
I think just looking at the 93 wins, you got to be happy with that. I think down the stretch was kind of frustrating to watch just because with the whole resting guys and not really pushing every day, it was a little bit like, let's just play the guys and clinch it and then rest afterwards. But I think it was nice to see him going that little run there at the end, get ready for the playoffs. And, you know, yeah, I think before the season, if you would have said 93 wins, you would have been like, ooh, I think Minnesota might be right on our tail or might be a little bit better than that. But with them pretty much locking up the division and, I don't know, July, they didn't really have to push to win every day. So it's not like the marginal value of winning 96 or 97 was very small, other than getting home field advantage over Houston, which would have been nice, but didn't seem like it was that important in through September. So.
Yeah, it was just a really weird second half just because everything was pretty much already locked up. The worst teams in the division or the projected worst teams were actually a little bit ahead of schedule. They were a little bit better. But the real competition at the top of the division just wasn't there. So the Sox had it. We're able to rest the guys, as Luke was saying. Looking back on it, they really prioritized health, obviously. But it would have been nice to get that home field advantage, which wasn't a guarantee over the Astros. So we'll see if that comes back to bite them.
And prioritizing health can be tricky as well, because as much as you might want to protect guys, things still do happen. You know, the team did run into some issues, including with Carlos Rodon, which we will address here in a second. But I want to wind up at least the first half of this podcast and devote some time to the dugout portion of Dugout Metrics. Both of you guys, college players, recently retired college players, in spite of your haggard, aged appearances. Recent players, Luke, you just finished up your college career, Trevor, a year or two ago, right? So we nibbled at this, I think, the last time we talked, or maybe just Trevor when you're on a podcast recently. As players, we made a big deal about, hey, it would be nice to catch Houston. It's so important that the White Sox have a home field advantage because they're so much better at home than on the road. And understanding that the major league player is going to be a little bit different than, you know, the level you necessarily played out, but still very competitive. Just step us through the difference in your mind as players, playing a big game, could be opening day, could be a playoff game, on the road versus at home, and how you think that plays into, you know, your comfort level, your ability to execute at the highest level you need to advance or to win.
Wait, so you mean the Sox aren't busting down to Houston and staying in the Comfort Inn like they do in D3?
Yeah, Tony may do that to them. You never know.
Yeah, and then you eat the continental breakfast before a really important game. So, hey, yeah, I think their trip down there might be a little bit different than what I'm used to in terms of playing on the road. But, you know, I think it's always good to be able to sleep in your bed, your own bed, especially the night before, not have to deal with hotels and stuff, just in general. But I guess it's kind of hard for me to relate on their accommodations on the road versus what ours were. But yeah, in general, like, you always want to be at home, especially with this White Sox crowd. You'd like to be playing in front of them the first two games. But now all you got to do is focus on at least getting one game in Houston and then coming back for the Sunday night game, where I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be something cool. So,
Luke, that was the most polite way anyone's ever told me that was a really dumb question. But that said, I'm going to plow ahead. And Trevor, you know, give me your thoughts as well. You know, again, you know, your own bed. I mean, some of this does apply. Okay, obviously the travel is going to be a little more challenging. But
Trevor's a D1 guy.
Okay, fancy pants. Tell us what it feels like for you. Big game, home versus away.
Yeah, those 40 to 50 parents at Knights Field gave us a big lift. No, just giving you some more smack, Brett. But seriously, they in the MLB or in Major League Baseball, it's about a 54-46 split with two evenly matched teams as far as percentage of win probability expected, home versus away. And I think especially in an electric postseason environment like you're going to get, a big aspect of that could be just the fan engagement with the umpires. Umpires can get caught up in the moment too. And so I think that's big. And then another aspect of it is, and I think I mentioned it on the last podcast that we were talking on, Houston isn't necessarily a cookie cutter ballpark. It's a really quirky park. There's a lot of weird angles. So maybe add a couple percentage points for that. We already discussed Aloy out there and left with those weird angles. The White Sox are a ground ball hitting team when they're going bad, and they have that short porch out in left field. The Astros aren't really a great matchup for the Sox, especially in that ballpark. So it really would have been nice to get three out of the five games at home. But we'll see. The playoffs are such a crapshoot in general that anything can happen.
Okay, leaning even harder into this. Out of my great respect for both of you as recent college players, we now know the schedule for three games, and clearly, shocker, the White Sox are not the marquee matchup because either Boston or New York are going to be playing the Rays, which is clearly not a sexy team. The first two games in Houston are going to be day games, whatever you get, first games, and then, of course, coming to Chicago for that Sunday night game. Any difference there? How do you imagine that might play into the fan advantage, or even just the prep for the game advantage? Is there something to it being a night game where there's more buildup, or is that stuff you guys just dismiss?
Yeah, I think it was Giolito that mentioned earlier that he felt the team was playing a little bit flatter in day games, just because they weren't able to kind of get in their normal game day routine where, you know, get a nice sleep in and get to, you know, batting practice, have lunch, and then kind of coast your way into the game. Where I'm sure for the day games, it's, especially during the regular season, it's a little bit more of like a show and go type situation. You're not doing a whole lot before. But I can see why they prefer those night games. And I remember, I think it was somebody on Oakland last year when they were complaining about them being the two seed and they got all day games. So we definitely saw that last year, but it was, you definitely prefer, I think, the night games, and you want to be in the primetime games too. But yeah, I wasn't surprised to see them get shafted, and I'm actually kind of surprised they did get one night game. So that's good. I wonder if the Sox lobbied it all with the league, like, hey, we got this blackout game scheduled, and if it's a 2 or 3 o'clock start, it kind of defeats the purpose. So you got to give us at least something.
Yeah. And you figure Chicago market, not to say that a home game is going to get necessarily more viewership, but there may be some numbers that indicate that too. So, you know, you got a huge market for that home game. Houston's a big market too. Maybe they're not pulling away. We know the White Sox win bananas with ratings this year. So that might be something the league office noted enough to say, like, yeah, okay, guys, black it out. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. Trevor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, FS1 cuts to a blackout at 1 p.m. It's not the same as a nighttime, the whole stadium rocking in black. So I am super pumped that first home game is going to be a night game. I think it had a little bit to do with the Chicago Marathon, from what I heard. They are going to have to compete with Sunday Night Football, Bills versus Chiefs. So that's going to be a big matchup that I know a lot of people are going to be watching as far as just sports fans in general. But, you know, it's going to be an electric atmosphere, and I really can't wait to witness it.
All right. You're just being honest, Trevor, but I don't ever edit these, but I just may have to edit talk of the NFL. But you're right. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, just ratings right. wise, it is going to impact
Christ,
it.
Christ, my God.
Well, I had a Cubs fan in my mentions that when I was pretty pumped on Twitter, the Sox got a primetime game. He was like, well, actually, primetime on Sunday is actually the afternoon, so they didn't get primetime. I'm like, oh, okay. I wanted to reply and ask what time if the Cubs got the primetime game.
Yeah, right, exactly. What time is the Cubs? Yeah. Oh, there's going to be a lot of those opportunities in the next few years, guys. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to talk. We're going to drill down a little bit more to the actual White Sox team and strategies that could be employed in the playoffs here in the second half. Stick with us. We'll be back in a minute. Hey, guess what? It is Dugout Metrics 7. These guys here have got to witness 5 White Sox playoff teams. I don't think they remember the 2000 White Sox team too well, but I do believe they are alive. These guys have had an embarrassment of riches compared to me. I've had like 5 in my lifetime, and I'm, you know, twice their age. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. It's Dugout Metrics 7. I've got Luke Smales and Trevor Lyons back with me, and I'm thrilled. Gave him a little hassle at the start, but I'm thrilled. Let's be honest. Let's talk quickly before we get to Luke Smale's article, which is linked in this podcast post. You've probably already read it. Before we get to that, let's just address quickly what to do with this pitching staff. And I want to focus on a couple guys in particular. Dallas Keuchel, who seemed to get a relief audition and not pass it late in the regular season. And Ronaldo Lopez, who has pitched well, had a bad game on Sunday in the finale. How do you work those guys in? Are those guys both locks for the postseason roster? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think they're going to both be on the roster. I can't see a situation where Keuchel's not there. With Keuchel, I feel like you got to be like up or down 8 runs to throw him in. I mean, you just can't put him in any kind of crucial situation. If they're down by 5 or up by 5, I mean, you can't even throw him in there. With Ronaldo, I think him especially, I think he's kind of going to be the break glass in case of emergency. If something really bad were to happen with the starter, I think you'd bring him in with a fair amount of confidence, and maybe Kopech kind of fits in that group too. But with Keuchel, I mean, hopefully they get out into a huge lead, and then you can be like, okay, we're going to save Lance Lynn and bring in Keuchel. But again, that's got to be like 8 runs.
So, okay, Trevor, Luke has just identified the 25th and 26th man on the postseason roster, basically not being able to touch any important moments. How do you line up compared to that? Because now we've just 2 roster spots where we sort of don't want to use the guys. You have more confidence, or do you think for sure they're going to be on the roster?
Yeah, I honestly probably have less confidence in that. I would. I'm exact same boat with Keuchel, only if they're way, way, way up or way down. And I'm in the same boat with Reynaldo. I don't trust him either in a postseason matchup. If they have a big lead or they're down big, you can throw him in for mop up duty as well. But in a short 5 game series, blow your guys out, ride your horses. I want to see our top 4 starters, including Rodon. If you're going to piggyback someone, you can piggyback Kopech. And then our guys out of the pen that I want to see are Hendricks as much as possible, Bummer, Kimbrel, Tapera, and Crochet. Anyone else than that, I don't want to see on the mound in any sort of a close game.
Okay, before we get to lineup optimization, speed round here then. Based on the fact that you've both agreed that the 25 and 26 spots are basically just, you might as well liquid paper them for the impact they're going to have, at least in this first round here. Who does that then put the most pressure on the staff? Because those two guys are sort of like not going to be useful in the pen. Who's going to end up getting a harder workload, whether they can take on or not? Who do you think it falls to based on the fact that the White Sox are going to be carrying a couple guys you can't trust?
I mean, I think Lewis is really going to push Hendricks. I think, especially in the first 2 games, if they're up in the, I don't know, 7th, 8th. I mean,
yeah.
Because I mean, if you get 1 game in Houston, I think you got to feel like you're in a really good spot heading back to Chicago. And so, I mean, the bullpen, I mean, Bummers looked really good. I think you can throw Tapera out there with a lot of confidence. I still think, I mean, people have not been happy with Kimbrel. I still think he's a really good option compared to what other teams can throw out there. I'm still throwing him out there with confidence. And so now you're kind of shortening the game to where, you know, Lynn and Giolito, give me five good innings and then I'm going to turn it over. So I still think there's going to be a fair amount of pressure on Kimbrel, but I think he's going to come out and perform a lot better than he did in the regular season here in the playoffs.
Yep, I agree with that. Hendricks was going to be my first answer too. Ride him. He's a guy that wants the ball. So ride him throughout the playoffs as much as possible. And then the other guy, especially with Carlos Rodon's injury issues, is going to be Michael Kopech. I think that that's the reason they've been stretching him out a little bit, is to maybe piggyback off of a Rodon tandem start. So I think that that might be a trick up their sleeve. Those are the guys that I really think are going to carry a heavy workload. And then as far as the starting pitching, just to give a little bit of background on the way that they've matched up in, granted, small sample sizes with the Astros, Giolito, two games in the last 3 years, both complete games. So he has had their number. Lynn hasn't had quite as much success. Rodon has been really good this year against the Astros. And then Dylan Cease is pretty much about average Dylan Cease type performances against the Astros. Like I said, small sample sizes, but I really think that Giolito, you can ride him into the deeper into games. And Lynn is another guy that just wants the ball and I trust to step up in the moment. So not quite an Ozzie Guillen type thing with the starters, but I think you can let the starters work a little bit.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a bit of debate between Lynn or Giolito being your ace and your number one guy. I think just if only because of the matchup, I think it's Giolito. Most people don't seem to be agreeing with me on these podcasts, but that's my thought. Luke, let's shift your article before we get too squeezed. Please read it if you haven't already read it, everyone. Really cool piece. So I guess I want to jump right to, because I'm assuming some familiarity with those who are listening. Where is Tony La Russa making the biggest mistake with his routine, with his regular type of lineup practices in your eyes?
I think he's shifted with a couple spots, but I think Abreu in the three spot and Tim Anderson in leading off, I think he's like would never mess with that. And I think Sox has some really good other hitters, and those are two really crucial spots. So I would. And Abreu and Anderson are really good hitters, don't get me wrong, but I think they're kind of being misutilized in those spots. Like I said in the piece, I think Tim Anderson fits a lot better in the three spot, and I would actually move Abreu down to fifth. Biggest reason with Abreu is, and I found this really interesting in the book, was that we know that Abreu struggled with double plays this year. He leads the league with 28 double plays grounded into, and the third spot sees the most double play opportunities of any spot in the lineup. And so he's had some problems with pull side ground balls, I think getting a little bit over anxious, especially with runners in scoring position, maybe pressing for some RBIs and trying to get that RBI crown again. But if you move him down to fifth, you now see the second least amount of double play opportunities behind only the leadoff spot. So I think that's a subtle thing they could do. And then Tim Anderson, you know, doesn't like to draw walks. So we got a couple guys on the team and in this lineup that really like to draw walks. So I think we should get our on-base guys ahead of Tim Anderson and let him drive in runs with all the base hits he gets.
And that has you placing Yoan Moncada as a leadoff hitter, which is a very intriguing possibility. Before I let Trevor jump in, I'm going to hit you with a similar question, Luke, and that is, what's Tony doing? What has Tony this year done most right with his lineup with regard to optimization?
I mean, I think I like the move of Robert up to the two spot. I think the book says that the two and four spots are going to be where you want to put your best hitters in terms of WOBA or weighted runs created. And Robert and Grandal have pretty clearly been the best two hitters. So I think we've seen Grandal mostly in that four spot recently when everyone's been healthy. So having him and Robert in the two and four spots, I would say is pretty optimal.
Trevor, your take on the general concepts Luke is describing. Is there something you've noticed or you wanted to see Tony doing that he hasn't been doing that you might want to see him, who knows, maybe unveil for the playoffs?
I think Yoan Moncada is an interesting case because they have him in a position to drive in runs for sure right now. He's going to get a lot of opportunities for that. And in general, he's been more of a on-base guy rather than a extra base hit slugging guy. So if they could, I would try and move him into more of a table setter role, kind of like Luke was outlining. I do think that Tim Anderson is locked into that leadoff spot, and I don't really mind that. I know it's a little bit against the analytics, but he really is the straw that stirs the drink, per se, when it comes to the White Sox lineup. And I think he really relishes that role. So I might leave him there just because that's where he's comfortable. And he really, when he gets on base, gets a base hit to start a game, he really ignites the team. If you were going to move Abreu out of the three hole, then I think that would give you the flexibility to move Yoan Moncada into the two spot. But I really think that Abreu being in the three hole with Robert hitting second has really gotten Robert some better pitches to hit this year. In general, the league has an absolutely insane amount of respect for Jose Abreu out of everyone in the White Sox lineup. And while the analytics might not say that he's the best hitter on the team, a lot of these old school baseball guys have a lot of respect for Jose Abreu and don't want to face him. So I think that has gotten Luis Robert, who is an aggressive free swinger. He's toned it down a little bit this year, but it's gotten him some great pitches to hit. So I think I do like that.
Trevor, you sort of anticipated a follow-up I was going to have for Luke, but I'll twist it because I think there is this interesting like straw that stirs the drink aspect of Anderson, which does go against what you should be doing in a lineup. But because he is so important emotionally to the team, he really is the heartbeat. And you can just see the whole temperature of the team change when he gets that leadoff homer, when he gets on base. And in the playoffs, obviously he hit the ground running last year in Oakland. So it'd be very, very alluring to have him remain as a leadoff hitter, even if the metrics don't necessarily point him that way. What I'm going to ask though is, when Tim has been out, Tony has jumped Luis up to leadoff. And while that's not Yoan Moncada, that seems to be an instinctually decent move. Would you agree there with in the absence of Tim and apparently Yo-Yo not moving?
Yeah, I think against lefties, I think I'd put Robert in that leadoff spot too. Moncada's obviously a lot better as a left-handed hitter. I think Robert's just, I mean, when you have hitters like Robert, and I said this in the piece too with Grandal, I mean, you could probably put them anywhere in the lineup and they're going to be really good. So, you know, there's no, you know, anywhere you put him, the opposing team's going to have to pitch to him somewhat. So a lot of this too is, I called myself a lineup micromanager. The lineup's really good. They have a lot of really good offensive pieces, and we're talking about saving a run here or there, but I thought it was interesting now in playoff time because a run here or there could mean the difference between winning a game, losing a game, winning a series, losing a series. So from the team psyche standpoint, I think it'd be really weird if they showed up on Thursday and Tim Anderson was in the three spot. I think a lot of people would be like, what the heck's going on? I wish maybe they would have tried it earlier, but I think it's, with a really good team, it doesn't mean as much as maybe a lot of people would think.
Well, and then Luke, if they lose, you know, Tony in a Zoom post game is going to be like, well, yeah, I read Luke Smale's piece.
Yeah.
What do we do? You know, yeah, different stuff. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of how series can go and how the temperature can change really quickly, and it really can be just a razor thin margin between going home in the first round and advancing onto the ALCS, I think it's time to put you guys on the spot and let's talk about what you think about the series. I'll go first because I sort of already went on record yesterday saying I did not think it was going to be a 5-game series. I did think the White Sox are going to win in 3 or 4. Now, since then, I've read Joe Reese's Super Joe had a little super quick preview, and we don't really know how the rotation matchups are going to be or anything like that yet, but just smashing the teams together. And that's tempered my enthusiasm a bit because I hadn't really realized that Houston was even an average fielding team. Not sure why I didn't realize that. I know our pitching advantage is significant, but it does make me swallow a little harder and think that perhaps I've gone a little too hard on the trash cans, but I'm going to stick with, I got to stick with it. How do you guys see this series playing out? And, you know, maybe a key matchup or a key aspect, a key guy you really need to have perform for the White Sox to advance.
I think that, yeah, go for it, Luke. You got it.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. I think McCullers, if he's starting game one, that's going to be a really tough matchup, I think. I was at the game that he pitched in Chicago, the first game after the All-Star break, and he's nasty. I mean, he's got those two breaking balls. He throws a slider to righties and curveballs to lefties, so it's kind of hard to neutralize, you know, either of those, no matter what kind of platoon advantage you throw out there. But my prediction was I thought the Astros would take game one, the Sox would take games two and three, and then in game four, the Sox would try to piece together a pitching and piece together nine innings. It wouldn't go so well. And then they'd bounce back to Lance Lynn in game five and they'd win it in Houston.
Okay. That's a narrative. That's a narrative. Yeah. Okay. Match that for creativity, Trevor.
I like it. I like it. Like I said earlier, the way that the MLB playoffs is set up is the most amount of parity of any league. It's a complete crapshoot for the most part. You could take the best team in the playoffs in the Dodgers and match them up with a team that snuck in like the Cardinals, and it's still going to be about a 60-40 percentage that the Cardinals can advance in a five-game series. Granted, they're playing a one-game series, but in general, it's such a crapshoot that you have to go with the White Sox. I mean, that's the team that we all root for. So I'm going for the Sox. And then I was looking up some splits McCullers earlier today, the Sox hitters that have 7+ ABs against him, and they all have struggled. He's a ground ball pitcher. Sox are a ground ball hitting team, not a great matchup. I don't think that the Sox match up very well with the Astros, but it is such a crapshoot when it comes to the playoffs that I'm going with the Sox, and I'll go Sox in five as well.
Yeah, they don't strike out. That's what's so tough. You know, like even the Rays, people talk about the Rays not necessarily being built for the postseason because, you know, strikeouts, you know, when you're facing the best pitchers in the game every inning in the playoffs, they can build up pretty quick. I think the Astros have the lowest strikeout rate in the league, and, you know, they just have experienced postseason players that, you know, you think about like Brantley and Correa and Gurriel. I mean, those guys have been through a lot of postseason games, so no moment's going to be too big. I'm sure the experience from last year is going to help the Sox, but that's why I think that game one, there might be some big time jitters, I think, on the White Sox side.
Do you, I think your predictions are predicated, of course, I'm even more aggressive than you. So all our predictions are predicated on the White Sox taking at least one game of the first two in Houston. If the White Sox lose the first two games in Houston under whatever scenario, do they have, obviously they have a chance, but do they have any realistic chance of taking this series?
I don't know. Cause then for game four, I think if you're down 2-1, so maybe any game in the first three they win. I think if you're in game four and you're down 2-1, I think you think about bouncing Lance Lynn back on 3 days rest or something like that, or maybe not for a full outing, but you got to get creative. And it's so vital to get one game in Houston. Cause then you turn kind of flip the home field advantage around, right? You get two out of three games at home and you try to grab two of those. So I think it'd be long odds if they're going back to Chicago down 2-0.
I agree. Yeah, they need one in Houston of those first two. And I'm switching my prediction to White Sox in four games.
Yeah.
I think
now you're talking.
I think the Rodon and Kopech tandem is going to be enough to get them the win in that game four. But I agree. If they do go down 2-1 and go into that game four, it'd be tempting to bring your game one starter back, which in my opinion should be Lucas Giolito.
And not that we're going to Bilvec this and be like, oh no, but the promotion won't be good. But really it's a gut punch to Blackout. If it's like, okay, our backs are already against the wall in our first home game and oh, we're all wearing black, but it's an elimination game. Now, granted, you're still going to play the game and you hope it's going to give you the advantage that gets the White Sox back in the series and cuts a 2-0 lead in half. But man, the up 2-0 or splitting in Houston makes a big difference coming back, because the momentum shift there for a game three, primetime, nighttime, blacked out, is going to be huge. And I know Houston's, you know, they've got the playoff experience and they've sort of won a ring, I guess. Yeah, I guess they won a ring. But, you know, hey, that nobody's seen this. It's been 13 years since we've seen it. Nobody's seen this. I think we could talk about what's going to be like to play, you know, our college players here. What's it going to be like to play on the road or home? And I took a bus and all that. Hey, listen, I don't care. You could be the Dodgers. You could be the Yankees. And this is going to be a freaky situation. And split up 2-0, forget it. I'll have to revise mid-podcast to a three-game sweep at that point. But all right, glad to see you've joined my side, Trevor. And we'll let Luke sort of just toe up to the line. That's cool, man. He's smart. You know, he's nice. Yeah. It's dugout metrics, man. It's cool. Yeah.
I think if there's one guy that I am worried a little bit about when it comes to that jitters aspect that you mentioned that maybe hasn't been in any of those big situations, it would be Dylan Cease. He's already a guy that has a history of command issues and he's put together a great season so far. But I would be a little bit nervous going into that game three in a must win situation with Dylan Cease there. I think the offensively, it's not really a nerves thing. They've shown last year in that series against the Athletics that they came out hot swinging. I don't think that experience really matters as much offensively, but those pitchers and guys that might be young and prone to wildness could have issues.
Hey, we got a little more time before Zoom's going to bounce us off, guys. So let's introduce a wild card topic here, and that is the managers, because you got me thinking about it, Trevor, because it's like, okay, Dusty Baker's an experienced manager. There are guys who are able to be rattled. Michael Kopech he showed a little bit of being rattled in the Field of Dreams game. Liam Hendricks did. There are guys who are not either. They have very little experience because let's face it, they're playing for the White Sox and there just hasn't been that much. And there are guys who didn't even have the experience last year, or is a very different scenario for them, who basically might be looking at this as a first time thing. A veteran manager like Dusty Baker, who has, you know, whatever you think about him, I happen to think he's been a pretty good manager over the years. Maybe not Tony level, but is probably going to try to work that if possible, knowing that he's got a team that's by and large more experienced, been there, and might be able to push a few buttons, because overall the team itself is probably stronger than the White Sox. How do you see the manager face-off working out? Or is it just going to be a great storyline? We can talk about two old guys and has no bearing on the series.
Yeah, I don't think it has a super large bearing. I think as a manager, there's only so much you can do to get, you know, your players or your young players kind of ready for this moment. You kind of just got to experience it a couple times to know how it's going to feel when you walk out on that field. Like Dylan Cease, I think most of us are expecting him to get that game three start. He has no idea how that's going to feel walking out in that game. Like there's nothing you can do to prepare for that. You know, if you're La Russa or Ethan Katz, all you can do is tell him to go out there and just try to do everything he's been doing. I mean, he had a pretty successful year, so you just tell him to go out there and try to throw 100 miles an hour past guys with a couple nasty breaking balls. That's all you can tell him to do. And you can't try to, I think, feed them too many things about like, oh, make sure you're thinking about this and thinking about that and don't get, you know, too nervous. And you just kind of got to let the guys play. So.
The coolest thing about all that great information you just gave us, Luke, is that you ventriloquisted it because your camera froze in a great pose, by the way. Your eyes aren't shut, your mouth's not open. But man, it's even cooler.
It is a great pose. Wow.
Especially cool with, you know, you're ventriloquizing all the great information. Okay, Trevor, your thought on the matchup, any different insight?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a huge storyline, or hopefully it doesn't become a huge storyline. Don't think that they're going to have a a major impact on the series. Hopefully La Russa kind of plays it by the book, but in the past he's shown that he can go with his gut in the postseason and it works out. So if he does go with his gut more than expected, hopefully he has that same luck or that same feel, I guess. As far as I just have a feeling, I have a gut feeling that the Sox are going to jump all over McCullers. His one kind of kryptonite is he walks more guys than you would like out of an ace. And the Sox have had a very patient approach this year for the most part. They have some guys that will work a walk. And so I could see him maybe walking a couple guys and then they jump on him for a couple big hits. I don't know why, but I have a feeling they've started out hot in big games throughout the last couple of years, as I mentioned on that last podcast. So I have a feeling that they might jump on him.
Trevor, I feel so much smarter that like you've sort of agreed with things that maybe I haven't even committed to, but that are in my head. I just feel so much smarter right now. Thank you guys. This has been a wonderful podcast for me and my ego. Okay. We got a little more time. So extremely quick bonus round, just because we're talking about the managers. Give me the percentage, 0% to 100%, that there will be an aspect of beanball war that happens in this series because we got two red ass managers like Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa.
I don't think you could play beanball in the postseason. I mean, and unless the Sox are up 2-0 and they're up like 10-0 in game three and the crowd's into it and, you know, Chicago's going crazy and I don't know, something happens before like a dirty play or something, but I can't really see that happening in the postseason, but I don't know. I wouldn't maybe not put it past Tony, but let's just hope and pray that there's no storylines coming from the series about Tony La Russa. That's
basically, that's been the case all year. Yeah. All right, Trevor, is it more than 0%?
I'd say less than 0%. No, we're analytics guys. I can't do that, but I think it's a 0% chance. I would be shocked if anything happened.
All right.
Well, I guess since we're analytics guys, we can't say zero, but okay. I'll go less than 1% chance.
Hey, maybe listen, they can yell back and forth at each other like they did. What was that in the 90s? Or
oh, that's going to happen. That's 100% is going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm taking the over. I'm going to say it's more than 0%. I'm going to say it's actually somewhat significant, but we'll see. I hope not either because it's clown ball, but we'll see. They are old school and you can't take that out of them. Okay. We are winding this up. Who knows? You know, the dugout metrics guys resurfaced. They may be back even again in this series and hopefully at least by the ALCS because the White Sox will advance, of course. But we've got a huge action packed week. We got a different sort of preview every day, including today's, which is Luke on the optimization of the White Sox lineup card. We're going to have pregame and postgame podcasts. We got a ton of game day coverage coming out of the game, previewing just more stuff that you know what to do with. You're not going to know what to do with. You're going to be like, I was off for 1 hour and I missed 5 news stories. Well, that's what's going to happen. And Luke and Trevor may also be participating in that coverage. But as always, everybody, thank you for listening, reading, and sometimes even watching. Luke, Trevor, let's do this again soon. Or, you know, if not, before next year.
ALCS preview. Let's do it.
All right.
Let's go. Sounds good. Thanks, Brett. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.